but I still wouldn't go there. But they go for the mother of all agitation and call it Ruth's, Chris's, which I'm sure I'm not alone when I say this. I don't know what the fuck it means. I'm sure this tested lower than 8 heads in a duffel bag, which was actually not a bad name for a movie. It beats the fuck out of Ruth's Chris fucking movie. In fact, I would be more apt to try the 8 heads in a duffel bag cafe just to see who shows up. But I'm back in Puerto Rico. That aside, I don't want to get all fucking worked up. I'm in the RCSH. Wow, even the acronym for that place sucks. But it's very nice. It's a high-end restaurant. And if you're a VIP, like me, or they call me a BVIP, which I found out means barely VIP, they send someone over to help you right away. And they're so nice to you. But sometimes it turns into being overhelped or OH'd. We always joke about it because you can't get a word in edgewise without them checking on you. It usually happens right at the punchline of a joke. There's a busboy, a manager, I'm like, and then the third guy says, hey, how you guys doing here? You guys good? I haven't checked on you in 40 seconds. I had to look at the front door and I look back, so I'm just checking on you again. Yeah, we're good. We're good. We're still in the same bite we took the last time you asked. We're good. Everything good? Food tasting good? Haven't got it yet, but yes, everything's unbelievable. Food is unbelievable. Okay, your food should be coming out soon. But you like the food so far? Yes, it's all good. Thank you. But all kidding aside, it's very sweet most of the time, and it feels great to be spoiled. They're always nice to you. Even the busboys are cool to me, which I like, because they can sense that I'm one of them. Because I grew up as a busboy, dishwasher busboy. Busboys come up and they go, hey man, I love Benchwarmers and Joe Dirt. They love Joe Dirt. If you need anything, you let me know. But you know, they help you at their level. You need any extra bread, anything. And by anything, I mean bread. All right, you come to me. You need a bread plate. You need bread. You need butter. You need a butter knife. Anything in the bread world, you come to me. I'm like, great. Because if it's within their power, they take care of you, which is cool. They go, I always got extra bread for Joe Dirt. I go, yeah. I actually appreciate it. I'm not being sarcastic. I like it. And then, of course, the managers float in and out. One of them will be like, hey, guys, in the middle of a joke, hey, guys, I'm the regional nighttime evening manager of this quadrant of the restaurant over here. They really just want to say hi to you. They don't want you to need anything, even though they ask, but I always do need something. And it throws them for a loop. It's like an uppercut. Right in the middle of their puffing up, hey, guys, I'm sort of the evening dusk manager of this section. And, you know, these 5 tables are under my jurisdiction, including one booth over there. I was sent here from corporate to check on you. I handle all the situations that aren't big enough for corporate. I'm a little above a waiter. So if you need anything, and I go, yeah, you got any A1? Dead silence. The guy's like, wait, what? I'm sorry, what's that? I'm usually chewing. You got any A1? Because you have to understand, in the nicer restaurants, they don't love it when you ask for white trash stuff like A1, anything you could get at 7-Eleven or a gas station. They also can't believe you're asking for something, even though they just told you, if you need anything, ask me. He goes, ah, ooh, He's hemming and hawing because these places have the best steaks in the world, and asking for A1 is super offensive. It's a little bit of like, hey, fuck you to the chef, your steak's not good enough, but I don't care. After a bit of stammering, the guy comes back with, you know what? I'll have the chef concoct something special for you. How about that? And I go, nah, A1's good. Good old trusty A1. Back to I know what I'm getting. I love A1. And they go, ah, ooh, and then I keep going, maybe some paprika. Just A1 and paprika. I'll be all good. You don't mean Lowry's, do you? They go, fuck, yeah, I mean, ugh, we'll look around. I don't know. And then they go, would you like a salad with your filet? I go, what kind of dressing you got? I'm extra white trash in this one. Well, we've got this balsamic bouillabaisse reduction from France that was imported today, and then the chef prepared it for the last 6 hours. I go, you got any ranch? I'm sorry, what, sir? That's not what I was at. Ranch! That's what I'm saying. Ranch would really hit the spot, guy. It's like in the Blues Brothers or something. No, we don't have ranch, sir. It's not allowed on the premises. I go, oh, well, maybe one of your little squad could be a lamb and scoot over to 7-Eleven, you know? Snag me some. Be a pal. Well, that's not really how it works here, sir. I go, yeah, it's only about a half mile away. It's no big deal. That'd be great. So in summary, A1 and ranch. That's it. Thanks. And don't worry, I'm going to tip a hefty 5%. I'm not some asshole from L.A., you know. I'm not some cheap Hollywood guy. You don't got to worry about me. Okay. All right, get moving. Chapter 27, The Plus One. The Plus One is a job in Hollywood that's existed since day one. Even in the old days, if you were a celebrity and you had to go to some sort of celebrity function, you could always bring a friend with you. You could bring your manager, your publicist or something. That's usually the plus one. But these days, there are people that make a full 7-course meal out of being a celebrity's plus one. Basically, if you're single or if your wife's gone a lot, you have to bring someone everywhere you go. If you can't bring your manager or your agent because they're always busy, then you bring a buddy. And this buddy needs to be someone who doesn't do a lot, doesn't have a huge blossoming career, because those are the people that don't have the time, at the drop of a hat, to go with you on a road gig, or go to a party, or an awards show, or come with you to Jimmy Kimmel when you're on his show. So just by process of elimination, the people who end up being plus ones are not the cream of the crop of the world. And that's the funniest part about it. Here's the thing. Everybody has one. I see DiCaprio's got his squad when he's out. Every famous person I see has a dude with him. You never remember his name, and they don't remember my guy's name, but they're always there. They just sort of fill out the room, drive with you, make sure you don't look like you're alone, because it's definitely weird to go somewhere alone. Everyone's always staring at you and going, why is Spade alone? If you're a regular person and you're alone, it doesn't really matter. But even when I eat alone at like Burger King, everyone's like, why is he here by himself? The upside for the plus one is that it's a great fucking gig. It's pretty much nonstop perks. Sometimes you even get some money. You basically live the exact same life as the celebrity you're plus one-ing off of. Plus ones are the thorn in the side of Hollywood. When you hear that some star gets a gift basket for being at the Emmys or something, their plus one is always right there saying, you know, you should probably give that to me. Because it's sort of an unwritten rule that your plus one gets that. I mean, it's sort of unwritten. I'm like, yeah, it's definitely unwritten because I've never seen it written. Never even heard of that. But I do it. Sometimes I get a gift basket with free stuff in it, like a gift card for jeans or an iPod or, you know, TiVo or anything more dated. Later, when you hear from the company that makes the jeans and they're like, oh, did you get the pants we sent you? Did you like them? I didn't know you were a size 36. I'm like, oh, yeah, they're great. Meanwhile, I realize my fat buddy called because he's a 36. Or they're bogarting your L.A. Dodger tickets from the TV network that were supposed to be for you, and now you owe the TV network a favor, but you weren't even aware of it because they took the call and they took the tickets. It's crazy. Or they're just snaking a great booth at a nightclub. My guy's great at that one. Any place he goes, he always meets the manager. And then he comes a week later and goes, hey, Spade's right behind me. He'll be here in 10 minutes. Might as well start getting me set up, guy. Free everything. And then an hour later, yeah, he's not going to make it. He's got an early call now. Plus ones are the real Cinderellas of Hollywood. They're working at a grocery store during the day, and then you call them with a fun activity, and they're like, hey, boss, got to scram. Going to the Emmys tonight. I guess his date fell out. Back to mopping like Joe Dirt the next day. See that? It's a little Cinderella-ish. You see where I was going. My plus one, we'll call him Stevie. Stevie isn't his real name because no one's really named Stevie. Stevie was the stepbrother of my best friend growing up. I knew him a bit because he was always with my best friend. But Stevie was sort of a fringe player, which wasn't bad, but I just didn't know him that well. He was cool enough, bit of a stoner, druggy, also in a band. But he's harmless, funny, fine. He wore t-shirts that were too tight, always rockin' Republic jeans. Whatever jeans that were sort of out of it by 10 years, you know. Usually puka shells around his neck. He had frosted tips on his brown hair, a little sun in. And admittedly, he was pretty good-looking guy, which made the whole thing extra frustrating. Technically, the dude had 24 hours a day off because forming a startup band in your mid-30s and early 40s is sort of an uphill battle, to say the least. The lifestyle grants you a lot of free time and no money. And he was my actual best buddy's stepbrother, which is really the equivalent of a glorified stranger. My buddy died when I was 21, so we were sort of apart for years and years. Me and the stepbrother guy, Stevie. And then he moved to L.A. years later to do his band. I moved to L.A., and at one point, I was doing Just Shoot Me, and I ran into him, and I needed someone to hang out with all the time. He was fucking on that shit. He could outdrink me, outparty me, outfuck me. He was tougher and better looking, and he literally lived a 100% better life than I did. It started to grind on my nerves because he was plus wanting the fuck out of me. He had sun in his hair, bit of a dipshit, which helped me a little because it meant not every single possible girl would fuck him first or just fall for him because he was sort of a charmer, you know, the type. He was his own worst enemy, thank God. I'll give you a few stories about the life of a plus one, and it's not even a cautionary tale. If you can be a plus one, fucking do it. I got my first taste of the plus one blues when I found myself the victim of constant manipulations. It started when I suggested having Stevie work on the set of Just Shoot Me. Now, this wasn't a bad idea because we have the same hours. I could give him an easy job like being a PA. He could do stuff around the set. It's not that hard, and he didn't have a job. So he got the job in a shocking turn of events because I told him. And then he told me that the salary wouldn't cut it. So I said, all right, great guy syndrome. I said, okay, I'll kick in an extra 800 cash every month so you can make your rent and all that shit. That'll make it up. And he was stoked. Meanwhile, I paid for literally everything because we were hanging out so much, so he was doing fine. One of the funny things he would do, because he had a little bit of cockiness to him, and by a little bit, I mean unbelievable, off-the-charts amount, he thought he knew a little about everything, so he would give us all notes about the performances on the show. Which, when you're a PA or anyone other than the director or exec producer, is sort of a no-no. And by sort of, I mean fired on the spot. But that didn't slow him down, even though I told him. I remember twice during the show, he walked up to the set between takes. The audience was talking and clapping while the showrunner gave us all our direction. Stevie rolls right up to George Siegel, who is the elder statesman of the show. And he goes, hey, George, you gotta do it more like you did in read-through. I don't know what you're doing now, but it's not working, man. It was hilarious last Monday at read-through. Do that! And then he walks away, sort of laughing to himself and feeling good that he helped the show. I hear this, and I'm already thinking it's so funny because it's so out of bounds. I can't even not laugh because it's too much anxiety. And then George turns to me and he goes, hey, why the fuck is your PA buddy giving me notes? I go, I don't know. I don't know, but I will try to put an end to that. And he goes, yeah, or just do put an end to it. Stevie was a professional rub-wronger. A week after that, he had an awkward encounter with our first AD. She was a very nice woman, assistant director. She was a bit older. She was very tough, very good at her job. I'll call her Patty. Patty sounds like an old name. Perfect. So Patty was a workhorse, and she'd been around sets forever. She'd never seen the likes of Stevie and his laissez-faire attitude. One night, we all went out, me, Stevie, two others. We went to a private party. We were all drunk, but I had to leave because I had to work the next morning, and so did Stevie. We were at this house in Hollywood Hills. There's a million stars, drugs, everything, and I go, fuck, it's 11:30. I gotta go. I gotta work tomorrow. I go, hey, bud, let's get out of here. We got a big shoot tomorrow. He walks me all the way to the car, still with his drink, and he goes, hey, there's no way I'm leaving this place. It's too fucking cool, dude. I can struggle through in the morning. I already know this is a bad idea. I'm like, eh, all right. Knowing in my head, they're not going to like this. He was like, don't get it, guy. So the next day, I'm there. He strolls in late. I don't even think he went to bed. He's super fucked up, gacked up, reeks of booze. He walks up to Patty, the first AD, starts telling her about his night. Not, I'm sorry I'm late. Just like, oh my God, you should have seen me. I was hanging around the piano, singing with Mick Jagger, all these celebs, doing shots, we're smoking cigarettes. Basically, from my perspective, he was probably just annoying everyone at the party because no one knew who the fuck he was with. They're like, who the fuck is this plus one? Where's the guy that brought him? Of course I was home. But he was loving it, and he was all over everybody, of course. No one there to pull him off, me. So Patty says, hey, Stevie, that's great, but weren't you supposed to be here an hour ago? I told you yesterday, I needed your head in the game. I needed you early. We have 30 extras. And he goes, I mean, what am I supposed to do? It's Mick Jagger. She goes, Jesus Christ, and walks away. Stevie comes up to me and goes, did you see that? And I go, yeah. He goes, she's kind of a bitch, right? I mean, I'm telling her about my great night. She keeps talking about work. I'm like, what the fuck? I thought we were friends first. I go, why do you think this 60-year-old woman who's watching Alice reruns at home all night on a 12-inch screen wants to hear about how you're making her job harder because you were fucking off all night because you're friends with me and you don't have to do your job and you were star-fucking everyone in sight? And he's like, I know, right? She should be fucking stoked for me. I go, oh my God, you don't get it at all. 3 years later, Patty came up to me with some complaint about him, just in passing, and I go, why don't you fire him? Her face dropped, and then she lit up. Wait, are you fucking kidding me? Are we allowed to fire this moron? I go, well, I mean, if he's not doing a good job. She goes, not doing a good job. He's the worst employee we've had in the history of my career. I should have fired him the first minute he got here. I never would have hired him. He's horrible. Can I please fire him? I didn't expect all that. I go, I mean, I don't know. Are you just keeping him around because of me? She goes, of course we're keeping him around because of you. He's off limits. I go, oh no. He wound up leaving the show that night. I think it was a bit of a forced retirement. He went off on me about how unfair the system is and how everyone fucked him over. And of course I was like, yeah, I know. This place is a bunch of assholes. The best time Stevie and I had together was a trip to Sydney, Australia. I don't really like to travel, and I don't go overseas, but I took him. I got to go for the Joe Dirt premiere, and he thought he was King Cock. We even got to shoot the shit with a crocodile hunter on the way down, because he was on our flight. Naturally, Stevie talks to him way more than I do. Even the croc hunter's eyes are darting to me like, are we going to get to talk at some point? Because this guy's smothering me. When we land, they were so cool, they sent like a bodyguard driver guy to be with me the whole time. He was going to be there 24/7 the whole week, which was great, because I know nothing about Australia. So we land at 5 a.m. on a Sunday morning, right? We get to the hotel about an hour later. I tell the squad, I think there's four of us, I go, let's sleep till 1, and then let's hit the town, because everyone was so out of it. But once I got to my room and I chilled for a second, I thought, you know what, the sun's up. I called everyone back, I go, let's just power through. We'll go all day, we'll go to bed early tonight and try to get on their time zone. So everyone agreed, I called the driver and I go, hey, whip back around front, we're going to breakfast. He goes, oh, I'm about 30 minutes away, mate. I go, you're fucking 30 minutes away? And he goes, yeah, I'm getting that, you know, stuff for you, wink, wink. I go, what stuff? Eggs? He goes, no, you know, Stevie told me you want some weed and some drugs, so I know a guy, but he's pretty far away, so I thought this would be the best time you go while you slept. What? So Stevie goes around me, orders this guy on a Sunday morning, no less, a guy we don't know or trust who could go right to the papers. He tells him to go out and get some weed and drugs for me. Not only is that shitty, but we had to wait a half hour for the guy to come back. I was stewing. Stevie's just sitting there while we're glaring at him going, this guy is a bit unprofesh. I'm like the guy that's going on your drug run. The next night was the Moulin Rouge premiere in Sydney. Remember when Moulin Rouge came out? So we all went because we were invited. It sounded like a blast, something fun to do. Nicole Kidman was the star. I met her once before on SNL when she hosted. She was very sweet to me. Might remember me, might not, but she was so cool. So Stevie and I are in the back of the theater. And it's like a cinema draft house theater where you can just booze it up in there. So we immediately realize Moulin Rouge is not our cup of tea. It's sort of a girly movie, whatever. So we leave to go down to the bar in the theater. We walk by Nicole Kidman and her two bodyguards. She's sitting on a little couch, no one else around. I go, holy shit, there she is, dude. It's her premiere. But she's probably seen it a million times, so she's hanging out in here. So we get drinks, we're buzzed, and Stevie says, another great idea, let's go talk to her. Now, I really don't want to bombard her, but I am buzzed, I am excited. She was always nice, so I go, all right, She's on this couch, like a loveseat couch, and there's a chair next to her. So she sees me, and she says hi. She gets up and hugs me, and I go, hey, this is Stevie. And of course, she doesn't care, but she goes, hey. And then she goes to me, have a seat. Like, hey, talk to me for a second. So I go to sit, and Stevie has already sat on the love seat next to her. Do you understand this, folks? Right next to her. She and I both stare a bit, because she sits back down like, oh, this joker already sat right next to me. She didn't know what to do. So I awkwardly sit in this dopey folding chair across from her. She doesn't know what to make of this. We start talking. She has a skirt on. She had just broken up with Tom Cruise. So we're laughing about something from SNL in the old days. And I said, now, first of all, this is inappropriate for me. I'll admit it, but I go, oh, you don't shave your legs. Look at you. Because she had hair in her legs above the knee. And she goes, oh, my God, no, I don't. Should I? I go, yeah, you got to get back in the game. And she goes, oh, I don't want to shave all the way up past my knee. I go, come on, Nicole, the marketing campaign is back on. Guys don't love that Bigfoot look. You got to get out there. You know, I'm just giving her shit, being stupid. She was fine with it. And then out of nowhere, Stevie goes, I think she has great legs, which wasn't the question. Reaches over, starting at her foot, folks, rubs her leg all the way up to the top of her thigh where it meets her skirt. And she goes, excuse me? And she leans back. The guards both lean in. They're like, sir, sir, sir. They're on their things. Eagle, eagle, foxtrot. We got a bogey. We got a bogey. And he goes, no, no, she's cool, dude. She's cool. She loves it. All good. All good. He's telling her bodyguards that it's cool. They're hers. She'll decide if it's cool. Meanwhile, they're like, she'll decide. Then we'll decide if it's cool. And then the whole time, why don't you shut up? So Nicole goes, you know, now she's just nervous going, I better go back in. And there's a hushed buzzkill across the room. So she leaves. I stare at Stevie waiting for the apology, and he's like, I think she wants to fuck me. What? That's what you got from that? 100% oblivious to literally anything going on around. So one time, Stevie and I were on our way to Hawaii with a bunch of people. We're on the plane. Stevie asks the flight attendant for a safety pin. Harmless enough. The flight attendant was like, I don't know if I have a safety pin. What's it for? And then he found one and gave it to Stevie. And then he opens up the pin and he has a dime-sized shanker on his chin and he starts digging at it. The guy's like, oh, Christ, yuck, barf. I didn't know you were going to do that with it. Give it back. Holy shit. Then he threw it in the garbage. I go, Stevie, what are you doing with that? Is that a cut? He goes, no, it's a shanker. Like a herpes one, you know? I munched out this stripper last night at a strip club, which was probably stupid because I also ate her ass. I was pretty fucked up. I love that he added, I was pretty fucked up. Because as he's telling me this story and he sees my face contort because it's so sickening, he has to find some way to justify that he's told me one of the grossest statements I've heard in years. I go, oh, well, you know, I'm sure anyone would do that with a couple of drinks in him. Just to make him feel better. I ate out her ass. A stripper, guys. You been to a strip club? 500 dances a night. Hot room. Gross, gross. You don't need a description. So we get to beautiful Hawaii, and then we have a pool at the house. But of course, no one will go in the pool with him because of his mega shanker. The house we rented had a concierge. Oh. So Stevie calls him and says, hey, make me an appointment with a doctor. So I guess he went to the doctor and he said, I don't know if it's herpes, dude, but just start hitting me with Valtrex. I got to get back to this pool party. The pool party, which consisted of four guys. So he comes back a couple hours later. Cannonball jumps in the pool. We all jump out immediately because we're all sickened. Cannonball of herpes and shanker coming in hot. In case you're wondering, the only reason I let him go to Hawaii with me is because he called it. Calling it is a great scam for plus ones. Sometimes my dad used to do this too. Stevie would say, hey, we gotta go skiing this year, dude. If you go skiing, let me know. I love skiing. And then the same thing a couple months later. Dude, it's heating up. We gotta go to Hawaii this summer. I love Hawaii. The problem is if I ever go skiing or go to Hawaii and I don't take him, then he's like, dude, what are you doing? I told you I wanted to go. I told you I love Hawaii. Who the fuck doesn't love Hawaii? I don't give a fuck if you want to go. I don't see J.J. Abrams and go, hey, dude, if you do another movie, I really want to be in it. I love movies. You know me. I love super fun things like starring in movies. And then later I go, J.J., I heard you did a movie. Did you just film something? I told you I wanted to be in it. Didn't you hear me? I was so clear. I want to be the star of your new movie. What the fuck? Not cool. That's the same rationale. Except Stevie's way more shocked than I would be if J.J. didn't put me in a movie. He loved Hawaii, because he could just walk around with his puka shell necklace. I think it was just a bunch of Vicodins sewn into a necklace, so it looked like puka shells. That was my theory. Because sometimes he'd be like biting on them, and I go, oh, you know he's slurping on a Vicodin one at a time. Sweet, sweet Vicodin. Getting a buzz. Puka, puka, not puka. Stevie was always big on wake and bake, and then had the rest of the day to have a screen up between him and the world. I never liked that. Wake and bakers drive me nuts. You know what, like, Stevie's life is so hard, he's like, ah, man, I can't take it. Can't take what? They sort of drive me nuts because they're feeling all chill with the world, and I'm basically having a conversation with a brick wall. So it sucks for me. I go, why are you always stoned? He goes, helps me cope, man. Yeah, I'm like, oh, you can't handle the world. Okay, great. But I have to handle the world, and now I have to handle the world and you because you're at breakfast, stoned, so you feel good, and you're not comprehending anything I'm saying, so it's obviously zero fun for me because you're just blanking out, and I'm like, hey, how are those sausages? Hey, did you hear about what happened in the news? And you're like, what, man? I'm like, what are you, Cheech or Chong? And it wasn't just weed in those days either. It was also the Vicodin. I'd quiz him on it. I'd tell him he's doing too much. He'd go, nah, I'm only on two right now. And I go, you took five. He goes, well, you know, three is like nothing to me. So four would be one and five would be like two. So I'm like on three right now. I go, wait, so six? And he goes, yeah, three, dude, wink. I go, by the way, let's say you were actually on three. Three's too many. Nothing's wrong with you. Three is when you have a broken leg. He goes, I'm broken up here, and he taps at his head. I go, well, that's a fair argument. Before we get on the flight to Hawaii, Stevie gets completely wasted and reveals to us that he got his yearly checkup, which he gets every 3 years, and he goes, you know what? My doctor even said I don't drink too much. We're like, wow, because I know for a fact he does about 8 to 10 drinks a night. And then I thought it out, and I go, wait a second. When you go to the doctor... The doctor asks you, okay, how much do you drink? And he probably said, two or three a night. And the doctor goes, eh, that's not too many. So that's how the doctor is telling him he's not drinking too much. It's based on his lie, which is actually quite funny to hear once you realize how it went down. Because he was telling everyone, my doctor says I don't drink too much. Everyone's like, oh, okay. It is a doctor. But about a week later, which is right before the flight, he said that during his second appointment with the doctor, he was going over his test. He sees the doctor scribbling something, and he looks over at the chart and goes, hey, doc, what did you write down? Doctor goes, oh, I just put liver D. He goes, what does the D mean? Doctor says, damage. You have liver damage. I guess you're drinking a lot more than we all thought. Stevie goes, oh, yeah, maybe I fibbed on a couple of those questions, but overall, I'm not bad. Doctor goes, well, you do have the liver damage, But the good news is, if you take some time off, it'll heal itself. That's the great news about liver and liver D. So we get on the flight to Hawaii, and I told him I didn't want him to come because he parties too much, and this was going to be a mellow trip. But you know these plus ones, whatever you say, they adapt. He goes, no. I want to go because I want to be mellow. Like, I'm not drinking. Like, no, that's, you're reading my mind. That's exactly what I want to do. So I naively took this as the truth, and I let him on. I think Paul Thomas Anderson, Maya, I think we had all these fun people on this flight. It's even funnier because about 2 hours into the flight, he goes, fuck this, let's party. 2 hours, guys. That's all it took. Pours himself a drink, holds it up with one hand. If you can picture that, as if to say cheers or to make a toast, standing in the middle of the jet, holding up his drink, and my buddy from Arizona, Jody, said the line of the night. He goes, what is that gesture? What are you, the Statue of Liver D? Oh, that was a funny one. We all laughed, even Stevie did, then chugged his fucking drink, forgot all about his liver damage, and went on to get shit-faced every day and night for the rest of the trip. Another great thing about Stevie is he would go around town rating and judging girls day and night. So embarrassing. Embarrassing. We'd go to a restaurant to have dinner, and he would sit there and act like an entitled dick. The problem with this behavior is it all reflects badly on me. I'm the only one they know. I figured it out after a few months, actually years later, when girls would say, I know you guys used to go out, but I heard you were a bunch of douchebags. I go, what? They go, you're that guy with you. I go, yeah, that's one guy. But that's why we fizzled out, because I couldn't keep taking the rap for him. Multiple times at dinner or lunch, the waitress would come over and say hi, and he'd lean back and stare at her with his tongue in his cheek, which is the worst possible way to look at a girl, like, oh, oh. And then in the middle of her spiel about the day's specials, he would interrupt her and go, hey, honey, you got a rockin' bod. Do a little spin for me. Give me a little spin in that outfit. Let me see what's going on there. One just flat out said, fuck you. And we all laughed, clapped. It is ballsy, the entitlement the plus one feels, thinking even someone like me could get away with that. I agree. It's my fault I let it happen too many times. I agree. He would just assume that people thought I was Tom Cruise or DiCaprio. He would always drop my name like I was the biggest fucking star in the world. People would go, huh, who? What's that guy from Dickie Roberts? Like, yep. Like it was Tom Cruise. Or like it was Brad Pitt. I would have to remind him I'm some mid-level jackass sitcom guy. So don't think you're with the president on Air Force One. I'm just one of the 40,000 assholes in the Screen Actors Guild that can pay my rent. Nah, dude. You're Pitt. You're Brad Pitt, dude. You even look like him. Anyway, rating girls. Obviously, he's horrible. He wouldn't even know he's doing it. He'd say, look at this chick. His other cocky thing was he would just casually say some quick fixes for the girl, how they could get better. He'd go, look at this girl. Look at this girl walking in. Cute, right? She's got those big legs, though. You know what? If she'd hit the gym, get some leg work in. She's pretty cute. Some cardio. Maybe some extensions for her hair. Hit the lap machine. Tighten that muffin top. I'd be all over that shit. I'd go, oh, I'll give her the good news. You want me to type out a list? Or should I just give her the bullet points so she can get to work right away on being the next girl you bone in a series of 5 million ratty chicks whose self-esteem is scraping the bottom? Okay? But listen, any girl would take this as great news because they're always looking for ways to get better for you. So let's get this out there. Let's put it on some telephone poles ASAP. Go, go, go. If you read my other book, it's called Almost Interesting. There's a thing in there about my old assistant, Skippy. Briefly, I got attacked in my house, beaten up, and tasered by my former personal assistant. And I had to get my shotgun out in order to get rid of him. It saved my life. So after that, I was obviously a little tentative about staying in the house alone for a while. So Stevie, another great idea. This guy's full of them. He goes, dude, I've got a great idea to help you. Why don't I get rid of my apartment? I'll move into one of your back rooms because it's a mansion. I mean, you don't give a fuck. That way there's always someone there. You won't get freaked out. It'll be right by that garage door. No big deal. I won't take the biggest room. I'm so humble. Obviously nothing's going to happen to you anymore, but I'll make sure because they got to get through me to get to you, huh? I'll take a bullet for you, dude. I'll take a bunch of them. So I go, why not? I mean, I hang with this dude all the time anyway. Yeah, let's do it. I'll feel a little better about sleeping there. Okay. So about a week after the attack, it's still fresh. Everything's going fine, but I'm still scared shitless when I sleep. So we go out to a bar on a Wednesday, not a big night. I work the next day, so does he. The bar's a little wispy, not much happening. So I tell him, let's not want too much from a Wednesday. Let's get out of here. But Stevie makes a quick Hail Mary to the girl sitting near us, because she's alone. He walks over. Hey, can I sit with you? She's like, no, I'm good. I'm waiting for someone. He goes, well, can I buy you a drink? Why are you still asking if she already got rid of you? Can I buy you a drink? She goes, actually, I'm waiting for my boyfriend, so that wouldn't be right. It would be weird. And he's like, ooh, giving her a tiny bit of attitude, which is always a great play with girls. They love it. Basically saying, fuck you. Then he comes back and sits down. I go, all right, you crashed and burned. Let's get out of here. So we get to the valet, my car pulls up, and he goes, I think I'm going to hang a little longer. I go, to do what? He goes, well, Maybe have one more drink, talk to that girl. I go, the one waiting for a boyfriend? He goes, yeah. It seemed to me like that boyfriend story was bullshit. Of course, in my mind, I'm thinking, well, even if it's bullshit, it's a story designed to get rid of you. But okay. So I says, so wait, you're not coming home with me? He goes, ah, I'll be there in a little bit. Which I don't love this, but I go, all right. So I pay the valet. Stevie goes, hey, can I get a couple bucks to cover the drinks and cab home? So I have a $20 and a $100 bill in my wallet. I go, Jesus, guy, like this is getting toward the end when I'm getting sick of it. So I pull out the $20 and he goes, well, it's not going to cut it, bro. He pinches out the $100 bill and he goes, all right, I'll see you later, or, you know, in the morning. And he walks away. I thought, okay, so the one thing I'm worried about is the noise of someone coming in when I sleep. Doors moving, things smashing, clicking. So basically, I hired this guy to come and do that. Scare the fuck out of me tonight. Great. Great decision, Spade. And I just paid $100 to do it. I think it took me about another 4 years to figure out that this wasn't the healthiest plus one situation in Hollywood history. We used to go to this crummy bar in Hollywood called El Guapo. It's not there anymore, but it was great. Every time we would go there, I would pay for all of his drinks because he was my lifetime plus one. He would also go there without me from time to time. And then the next bill I got when I was with him was high, and the waitress or bartender would go, oh yeah, your boy forgot to pay the other night. We tacked it on. Finally, one of them jokingly mentioned it in front of him, and he goes, what are you talking about? You don't charge me here. I'm a VIP. And they go, what's a VIP? Your buddy Spade is because he pays for everything. What are you? You're the plus one. So what, do you get a 1% discount? He goes, no, dude. I've been going here 7 years. I made this place. I'm the one who brought Spade in. You don't charge me. I'm the reason this place blew up. They're like, oh, so after 7 years, you don't pay anymore? And he goes, yeah. Bartender said, oh, we weren't aware of that. Yet another unwritten rule in this town. He goes, yeah, there's a lot of them. And I go, someone should be writing these down. Because no one remembers them. Part 4. A Polaroid Guy in a Snapchat World. The bomb. Chapter 28. My Brand. Hey, what are your favorite bands? Oh, my favorite bands are Jay-Z, Celine Dion. This isn't really true, but my point is, that's not really a band. That's like, I don't even know what you call it anymore, musical artist? Who are your favorite musical artists? Nobody really says that. It used to be easy. They go, what are your favorite bands? Hey, man, what bands do you like? Everyone understood this, but there are very few bands anymore, you know what I mean? That says something about the selfishness of America. It used to be, you know, Genesis, Van Halen, The Cure, U2. Bands, which to me is roughly 3 to 5 people all playing instruments. You know everybody in it, except the bass player. But you know what's going down with a band. But now when you ask people what their favorite band is or what their favorite music is, they go, oh, very concise. You know, Chris Brown, Beyonce, Luke Bryan, those are their favorite bands. You know what's funny about that? Those are just people, because no one else gets any credit anymore. It's always just about one person. These days, you have to say, who are your favorite singers? What's your favorite music? Because we never used to say Mick Jagger. We would just say, oh, I like the Rolling Stones. That was everybody. You see, it's sort of a small point, but it kind of makes sense. Today, I think everyone is carving themselves out to build their brand. Ugh. I hate brand. It's Eminem, Macklemore. It's all people taking care of themselves. In the old days, entire bands would appear on the cover of Rolling Stone. The frontman would never dare do it without the rest of the band, but now it's like, that's them running over there really fast, like in the cartoons. BRB, hey band, wait here, I got a quick photo shoot without you. Because this brand thing is gross. I don't even understand what it is. It's whatever people perceive their impression of you to be. Like I would say to someone, I'm going to do blah, blah, blah. And they're like, oh, that would be really off brand for you. And by blah, 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 I meant get married. Now, actually getting married would be off-brand for me. In a weird way. If that's what brand means, I don't really know. I blame Kardashian for this. Kim and her family tree always throw this term around. I mean, I've really only heard it since they came around, and the blame has to fall somewhere, so why not with the Kardashians? When anyone says I'm building my brand, it makes me sick. Shut up. Never say that out loud to people. What are you building, your name? That's your name. No, it's my brand. I think it's just your name. No, it's sort of a whole feel of me. It's my vibe. That's my brand. Oh, so it's just what people think when they think of you. So your brand is you're an asshole. So when people say your name, people go, oh yeah, that guy's an asshole. Okay, so that's your brand. All right, got it. Chapter 29, Spoiled Kids. You know, I grew up in a time when birthdays weren't that major. Up until you were 16, you'd get a scoop of ice cream, maybe a cake from the supermarket, maybe your name on it. There'd be a few paper plates. Everyone would sing to you toward the end. Even when you turned the big 16, nobody really gave a fuck. Maybe because I was poor. And everyone I knew was pretty much broke, so getting a new car for your birthday wasn't even in the realm of possibilities, so no one even guessed that would happen. If you still had a bike and you were 16, you were in great shape. And if there's a bus nearby, that was good too. Or you could borrow your mom's car after your two asshole brothers turned it down, which is my case. Which, as you can imagine, being fourth in line for a car isn't that great, especially an orange car with three dents in it. They say it builds character. It definitely builds anger. I recently saw that Kendrick Lamar, who's a multimillionaire in a rapper band, and that is the correct term, everyone should use it, he's the guy in a great rapper band. He bought his niece a Toyota Camry for her 16th birthday, and I thought, what a lucky bitch. Then I realized I was wrong because everyone on the internet from Spoiled America and Spoiled Instagram said, what an asshole! What a tightwad dick! Why didn't he buy her a Lamborghini or Rolls Royce? Other rappers do. He's got so much money. Get a crowbar in that wallet. Come on, Kendrick Lamar. This was interesting to me because people talk like that. Also because he gave her a free gift. Free. Of a nice, beautiful, practical, well-made car that gets good gas mileage. And a ton of kids had a problem with it, especially the teens of America. I'm sure anyone who's listening that's older like me got it that the little niece was luckier than shit to get a free, brand new ride for her birthday like she just walked off the set of The Price is Right. But that's the way it's become. I get it. Everything's bigger, better, easier now. But it doesn't mean everyone's got tons of money. It's just that expectations are higher, which makes it really tougher on the parents. I have broke friends that are trying to buy a car for their kids for their 16th birthday only because everyone else has one. Every other kid got one. And the kids bitch and moan if it's a used car. What happened to tough shit? My dad used to go, tough shit, Davey. Life's tough, isn't it? You gonna make it? I'd go, what a dick. I just want someone to feel sorry for me. That wasn't the way to handle it. I actually, don't puke, I got a Ferrari recently, a 488. I immediately realized I look like a douchebag. I knew it coming, but they're so cool to me, I said I have to get one. And I looked like a douchebag more than I normally do, with my trucker hat on. Hey, everybody, I'm 15. I know, I don't want to hear it. The problem with a Ferrari is everyone thinks you have a small dick and you're a loser. I don't know how that rumor got started exactly, but it's bad for their brand. I brought brand back. But honestly, the old man in the Ferrari is a symbol of bad, not good. And that sucks because a Ferrari on its own, without the old guy in it, it's a very cool, perfectly well-run machine. And the whole reason I got a Ferrari is because I was brainwashed as a kid. There was this poster, maybe you've seen it. It's a Ferrari, a champagne bottle on its side, and a naked blonde girl lying on her side. It was like the curves of the car, the curves of the body, the bottle. It was sort of dimly lit. Yeah, man. It symbolized the coolness and richness. And that's what every broke kid like me wanted back then. We wanted girls. We wanted cars. I don't really care about champagne, but I wanted all baller shit before I knew what baller shit was. When you're a kid, your dad will tell you shit like, which engines are good and which cars are cool. And if you ever see a Ferrari or a Porsche on the street, you go, oh, cool, like under your breath, because you never see them where you live, and they're always flooring it through your crummy part of town. Because, again, I was broke. An interesting side note, when my dad dumped us all, we were 3 boys, 4, 6, and 8 years old, he would pop back about twice a year to take us to lunch, and he always told us the same bullshit lie, I'm getting a silver Porsche. And I got so excited. I would tell everyone at my school my dad was getting a silver Porsche. I think he just did it to, I don't know why. But as of press time, still no silver Porsche. Not even on the horizon. In fairness, maybe it's on layaway or something. I don't exactly know what the problem is. So I spent my whole life thinking about getting a really nice car. But I couldn't. I had no money. By the time I reached 30, I had a little more extra cash, but not 300 grand for a car extra cash. And then I turned 40, and I finally figured out why only old people have Ferraris. It's the first time in your life that you maybe have enough money to be able to afford a Ferrari. It took me till 50. I got it. I drove it off the lot. And you feel kind of cool because you're proud of yourself. You got something that you talk about as a kid, your friends did, your dad did, their dads did. And then it gets ruined because people point at you and go, what a fucking dick. Look at that dickhead in the Ferrari. Oh, it's Spade with the stupid crooked hat. What a dick. He's sort of an extra dickhead now. Except for 7-year-old poor kids. They go, cool. So I had this Ferrari, and I never felt comfortable letting anyone see it. So I sold it. I remember no one knew I had it. I didn't tell Sandler, I didn't tell anyone. I had it 6 months. Then I see these girls like Kendall Jenner, who on her birthday, no bullshit, got a Rolls Royce and a Ferrari. The Ferrari 488 that I just got 1 month before. Do you understand how baffling this is? I busted my ass in every dirty, shitty comedy club across the country all of my life. I've done 24 movies, 5 TV shows, 2 stand-up specials. This chick turns 21 and for no reason gets a Ferrari as a stocking stuffer. The next day she woke up littering and goes, oh my God, I'm so hungover. I remember the Rolls Royce. I forgot I got a Ferrari too. Let's bring back public stoning. It just goes to show you nothing makes sense in this world. I'm still an idiot. The guy that had a Ferrari, the guy that made a bad decision, bought a stupid Ferrari, and Kendall Jenner is still hot and beloved and gorgeous and everyone's crazy about her and she has a lot of followers and this was a blip on her radar. Tough shit, Spade. Calm down. More chapters to come. It's not worth it. It's not worth it. Chapter 30. Caitlyn Jenner. I saw Caitlyn Jenner at a car show recently. Now you know who Caitlyn Jenner is, right? See, I grew up knowing about Bruce Jenner. And then there was the switcheroo, which you read about that in the papers, right? You know what happened. And I was a little shocked, but that's okay to say. I mean, I didn't see it coming. It's not good or bad. It just was sort of unusual to me. Well, I didn't see it coming because growing up, we really didn't see any transgender people. I mean, I guess I saw them, I just didn't know it. They were called transvestites for the first 98% of my life. I mean, the Rocky Horror Picture Show had one, and that's really the extent of my experience. I didn't have any good or bad opinions about them because it wasn't even on my radar. As I got older, I heard about trannies. And this was a shortened version of that word, and I think it was acceptable for a while until transsexual came along. And as of press time, the term is now transgender, or fluid. That's even after press time. That's at this recording. Someone just whispered it into the recording. I don't think people are being mean or intolerant when they use the wrong term, because no one gets an alert on their phone when it changes. It's just something you find out by someone correcting you, which just happened. When I heard about Bruce becoming Caitlyn, I got curious about a lot of things. Random things, like, what do you do to your voice? You know what? Do you change it? Do you make it girly? Do you keep it the same? Do you discuss it with anyone? Do you not discuss it? Do you just do whatever you want? Then all the dust settled. I never would have guessed she sort of came up with a James Cagney lilt. I mean, maybe it's my imagination, but when you hear it, it's like, yeah, Kylie and Kendall, see? We all go out. We go to the flower shop and the car show. We do girl stuff and boy stuff. Oh, yeah, you dirty rat. I was like, wow, like a 40s gangster, that's an odd choice, but I like it. It's different. It's interesting. Unpredictable. But back to Caitlyn. When Bruce first revealed he was a trans woman, oh, it just changed again after that last paragraph. All these celebrities were out there trying to be so fake, proud, and supportive. I mean, Courtney Cox, Cindy Crawford, they'd be like, oh my God, Caitlyn Jenner is so beautiful. Have you seen her? I'm so proud of her. She's so gorgeous. Reporters are like, really? You kind of look like her. They're like, fuck you. Are you serious? That monster? Take it back. Oh, you kind of changed your tune there a little bit. And then the name Caitlyn itself threw me off. That bothered me, because you know what? That's a trick. Bruce was like, what, 70 when this happened? You don't get to be Caitlyn. You know what? Because, like, my name's David. That's so boring. I'm like Marlon Brando. Nobody cares. I hate it. Doesn't perk the radar, perk the ears of any cute girls. I wish I was Connor. If I was Connor, I would seem like I'm 27 years old or 28. Girls would be like, oh, hey, Connor. I'm like, hey, man, what's up? Like, I'd be like Bieber. I'd pull my pants down a little bit. I'd be like, hey, have you seen Connor Spade? He goes to our school now. But I don't get to do that. And I would be very cool about it. I'd be like, hey, man, be nice to me. I'm going through a name transition. Back to Bruce. I mean, no one's named Caitlyn at 70. Come on. If you're going to change your name, at least make it age appropriate. You know who you are now? You're Barb. Barb Jenner. That makes sense. Hi, I'm Barb Jenner. How are you? I'm Gertie. Yeah, Gertie Jenner. Yeah, you're not Crystal. No, you're Helen. I'm Judy Jenner. Look at me. Let's have some pie. I'm 75. My name's Nancy. You can call me Nance. I'm Patsy. Patty. Patty Jenner. Pat. You can't be Crystal overnight. Do you understand what I'm saying? You're not Dakota. You're Dolores. All right? Listen, I get it. My friends hold me up, too. I hate it. I'm out at a club or at a bar, and there's girls coming over, and I go, oh, shit, here we go. Hey, girls. You know my friends Pete, Rick, and Roger. Gary might come later. They're like, oh, fuck, later. Not cool, not interested, and something about it, just a bad vibe, don't want to walk over there, not for us, thank you though. We just sound old, it's so gross. That's why I lie, I go, you know Aiden, Caden, and Jaden, they're like, oh, hi, let's get a bottle. Well, sit down, scooch. Move your fucking fat ass, Aiden. Or are you Jaden? I can tell you this much, Kylie Jenner's never going to name her kid Howard, all right? It's going to be named after the next porn star scandal person. Chapter 31, The Strong Female Lead. Look, I know actresses have it tough. I mean, they're finally starting to get equal pay after being treated like second-class citizens for this whole time. I realize that over the years, not all roles for women in the movies are great. They're not all meaty parts with substance. They're not all great characters. Oscar bait. Agreed. The truth is, and I'm not revealing any big industry secret here, is that a lot of the women that come to Hollywood to be actresses are the prettiest girls in their small towns, and they come out here wanting to be movie stars, right? Now, we know that's not every actress. There's certainly an assortment of shapes and sizes hopping off that small town bus to the big city, and that's just a reflection of the real world, which we need. In a perfect Hollywood, there would be parts available for everyone, but in reality, that's probably never going to happen. As much sympathy as I have for the women in this tough, and it's sometimes cruel business, I have to say, I'm sort of sick of actresses these days who constantly demand to play the roles of strong, independent, smart woman. I get that that would be ideal, but if you want to be realistic, the strong, brilliant female lead can't be every role, because that's not every woman. I mean, let's face it, there's some dipshits out there. There's some dumb girls. They're not all smart and strong. That's just true. Every movie and TV show has a variety of characters in it, you know? Strong and smart is fine, but that's a piece of the pie chart. It's not the only piece. It's not even the biggest piece. Here's an example. Just yesterday, the girl that helped me at Foot Locker in the mall, she was not the NASA girl from Hidden Figures, I can assure you. I've got some bad news for Margot Robbie. If we wind up doing a movie about my sales girl, you're going to be playing a dipshit. For example, she held a $5 bill up to see if it was counterfeit, and then rubbed it against her teeth. I said, why would you rub it against your teeth? She goes, to see if there's any coke on it. And then she laughed and laughed because she thought I was on Impractical Jokers with her. But I was not. And she was not. How about the chick that ran up to me in the weed store and asked where she could buy weed? Not exactly Condi Rice. You know what I'm saying? They're not all Viola Davises. And I know everything is different for men, but do you think I demand to play the smart guy in every movie I'm in? I've never been the smart guy. I'm a fucking doofus in everything. Skirt chasing, horny, dumb fuck. By the way, I'm literally like the dumbest person in the room and everything. Me, Will Ferrell, we're all idiots. And it's funny. Shout out to Will Ferrell, I dragged you into this story. But it's true, and we don't complain about it, because being the doofus is better than not being in the movie at all. And we pick it. It's fun to be the doofus. For most actors in most movies, those are the options. Still, girls are like, I'm sick of parts where women are weak or just pretty or they're just girlfriends. Well, sometimes they're just pretty and they're just the girlfriends. Then I don't want to play that part. Okay, then I will. Fuck it. Throw a wig on me. I don't give a shit. Listen, I did it in Gap Girls and I'm gambling on the fact they're never going to ask me to play Stephen Hawking in Scorsese's movie. I'll play dumb as long as I keep getting SAG insurance. Fuck it. Let's go. That's a pretty good trade-off. Where's the wig? Where's the trailer to put the wig on? Where do I sign up? Where do I call my agent? Where do I get my scale plus tan? Chapter 32, Race Jokes. Here's a disclaimer right at the top. Listen, I'm old, white, and supposedly rich. I'm the worst case scenario. I can't say shit about this. I can't say shit about anything. I get it. I'm now in a category where people picture me as the Exxon board member plotting how to contaminate the world. Everything I say sounds like I'm in a room with a bunch of other white old guys going, let's bring back slavery. It was good business. But I don't want to bring back slavery. I've been around a lot of races over my years on the planet, so I like to try and comment on things, add my meager 2 cents. Plus, I need an extra chapter, so here we go. Every comic has race jokes. Okay, FYI, for the younger listeners, race has always been a touchy subject. And it's not just recently. There's been a bit of a shift lately, as in what's okay to say and what isn't. And by shift, I mean I can't say anything. The way it is today, black comics can pretty much say whatever they want about race, as they should, but white comics can't really mention it. I mean, they can, but it's a very risky operation. It always tightens up the crowd. Believe me, I would love to talk about race. I would have twice as much material. But as a white comic, I'm not really allowed to. I mean, I'm allowed to, but it's got to be so smart and bulletproof that it won't blow up in my face and ruin my career, so I just stay away. I have to look at a joke from 90 different angles to make sure it's not combustible. And the worst part is, that's actually what you want from your jokes. To be thought-provoking or unsettling. Because that's the beauty of doing comedy. But just writing about the subject is getting me itchy, especially saying it out loud now in Audible. To be honest, it's so fucking dicey. It's gotten lopsided in terms of who can and who can't talk about certain subjects. And I'm not saying black comics shouldn't have a voice to comment on the infinite struggles they've endured. Of course not. I'm not saying white comics should be out there complaining about how hard it is to be white. I get that that would puke everyone out. But forbidding one group from talking about a particular subject is odd to me. But it's not really forbidden. But you know what I'm saying. Black comics can always start jokes with, I see this white guy at a club, and he's like, hey ladies, get a load of these dance moves. I just got off work at Chili's where I'm a night manager. Okay, fine. I mean, that's a possible joke from someone's act. But if I dare do a black voice, because that is a clear white voice, okay? Let's say I do a black voice. Forget even continuing the joke. I'd get a telegram telling me I'm out of show business effective immediately. Like if I go, this black guy comes up to me. You ever seen black guys the way they are when they go into 7-Eleven? Everyone would just stop. And I'm like, yeah, cannot. I was like, wait, what, are you trying to sound like a black guy? So, terrifying. By the way, white people are the last group I'm finding out that you can still shit on and get away with it, and get laughs, with absolutely no repercussions. Why? If one race is off limits, then all races are, I would say. Believe me, I'd rather make fun of all races across the board. White jokes don't offend me, but when they're the last race jokes you can do, then they start to. Especially if there's anger behind them, mean just to be mean. By the way, just writing a black voice makes me nervous. Someone might say, what's a black voice? And I'm like, and that's it, I'm a racist. See? Very dicey. There's absolutely no reason Chappelle can do jokes about race, and I shouldn't. Not can't, but I shouldn't. I'm not attacking history. It's possible my white ancestors were the kinds of rich assholes who treated blacks poorly. I mean, that's well documented that white people weren't great in the past. I got it. But I'm just a regular dipshit comic. As Billy Joel so eloquently put it, I didn't really start the fire. I'm paraphrasing. I think it's we. But comedians, you know, they'll make fun of anything. AIDS, 9/11, anything. Nothing is off limits. If no one's around, They are the worst people saying the worst shit you can imagine. But even when they get the balls to say those touchy subjects on stage, white comics rarely do race jokes on stage. Some get away with it,